Heal Thyself, Using a Holistic Approach with Dr. Eric Madrid.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to today's podcast. Today, we are going to be having a discussion with Jimmy Moore, who is an expert in both intermittent fasting and the keto diet. He's the author of 8 different books, including The Complete Guide to Fasting, Keto Clarity, The Ketogenic Cookbook, Real Food Keto, and even Keto Cure. So you're going to want to listen to all the excellent information that we are going to be sharing with you today. Jimmy started off his journey at 410 pounds, and it was at that point he decided he would start a ketogenic diet. And since then, he has lost over 200 pounds and has been a big advocate for the keto diet. He also is host to Living La Vida Low Carb, one of the longest running podcasts, has almost 1,500 episodes, and that podcast is also highly recommended for those who are wanting to learn more about the keto diet and lifestyle. So also, if you're a first-time listener, we welcome you. Thank you for listening. Also, for those who are returning listeners, thank you very much. And we ask that you please visit Apple Podcast or whatever format in which you are listening to this podcast, and please leave us some positive feedback. Also, if you'd like to follow me on Instagram, please do so at Eric Madrid MD. I'm also on Facebook. You can search for Eric Madrid MD. Thank you very much, and stay tuned, and we have an exciting show for you today.
All right, great. Hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I've been up since about 3:30 in the morning. I hit the ground running early. My circadian rhythm just gets me up early in the morning, and then by like 6 o'clock, I'm dead. So,
I wish I was that kind of person.
You're not a morning person.
I'm not. I'm more of a night person. That's for night.
Yes, my wife's the same way. She could stay up till like 1 or 2 in the morning, and it's all I can stay up to 10 o'clock now.
Right. Excellent.
So, yes, that makes me an old man.
Yeah. So do you come out here to Southern California quite a bit, or?
I haven't been to Southern California that often. Obviously, I'm coming to Long Beach for the metabolic conference coming up. And then we've done here and there, like when we've flown to Australia, We'll fly out of LA.
Okay.
And so that's like the only, and then I did a Tom Bilyeu show last year, Impact Health.
Right.
And I was on his show, and he's in Beverly Hills. So yeah, I don't go there unless I'm like requested to be there for some reason.
Exactly.
I don't go out of my way. Southern people don't do that, I guess.
There you go. So, if you don't mind, I'd like to just kind of dig right in here and hear your story, and you're very inspirational. And I just finished reading a Keto Clarity. And a very insightful book. Excellent. Yeah, it's a great book. And so if you could share your story with our listeners about how you started at 410 pounds, because I think a lot of people, when they're trying to lose weight, they think, well, that's you. That can't happen for me. I'm different. I'm too heavy. I have too much weight. Can you share that information?
Oh, my gosh. This gets at the heart of why I keep doing what I do today, because back in 2003, I was 410 pounds. I was on 3 prescription medications for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, some respiratory issues. I was having wheezing problems. I was 32 years old, literally just turned 32 that year. And I'm going, okay, I want to do something about my health and my weight, but what do I do? Because the default diet my entire life has always been, when you wanted to get healthy, you had to cut fat, you had to eat more whole grain type of foods, and you needed to exercise till you drop. That was kind of the formula that I watched my mom go through, never successful at it, but she did it.
Right.
And so people forget, you know, when you become conditioned to do something, you keep doing that same thing you're conditioned to do until a new paradigm comes around. And so for me, I had lost weight, gained weight, lost weight, gained weight, you know, so many times over the years doing that low fat, high carb exercise till you drop paradigm, that I'm like, something has to give. So
the advice that us as doctors have been giving and still give in most cases, and it completely does not work well.
And a lot of patients don't even realize that you guys as physicians, and you would be the first to admit this, you don't get a lot of training when it comes to nutrition. Right. How much training did you get?
Probably less than 6 hours in total.
Yeah, I talked to a Duke University med school student last year, and he said, a senior, and he said, I only got a 3-hour seminar. Right. That was it. And they didn't talk about insulin. They didn't talk about the carbohydrate connection to inflammation or any of the stuff that I talk about in my work pretty often. Anyway, back to my story. So I learned about this low carb way of eating because of my mother-in-law, God bless her. She gave me a diet book for Christmas in 2003. She wasn't very subtle then, and she's still not subtle today. Thanks, Mom. I know I'm fat. Appreciate that. But she gave me Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. And it was the first time that I had really in my entire life felt like, okay, this is outside the norm, because he was saying as a cardiologist, eat more fat. Now, he's a cardiologist. Doesn't he know that's the very substance we all know clogs your arteries and gives you heart disease? That's not good.
Right.
And then he says, eat less carbohydrate. Well, you know, all the healthy diets said, load up on the carbs, make sure they're healthy whole grains. And so it was kind of this paradigm shift in my head as I'm reading his book between Christmas and New Year's. And I'm going, this guy's whacked out of his mind. What is he talking about? Doing all of these things that's basically the opposite of everything we've been told.
Right.
And I was like, what the heck? I've done low-fat diets and been miserable and hungry. Let's give this thing a go. So January 1st, 2004, I literally just passed 15 years since that experience. And I tried this. Lost 30 pounds in the first month. Wow. I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm a very svelte 380 pounds now. So then the second month, I was so energetic from this. And this is something people neglect too. How you feel matters even in the midst of the journey. And for me, I'd never felt energetic on a diet before. But on this Atkins diet, low carb, high fat diet, I actually felt more energy. So I had to go to the gym to get it out of me. And so I had a gym membership with my job. And so I ended up going, what was it, about 10 to 15 minutes at 3 miles an hour walking on a treadmill, which I tell people I was weightlifting because I still had a lot of body weight that I was lifting.
There you go.
But by the end of 100 days, lost 100 pounds. And I'm going, okay, there's something to this diet. Let's keep it going. And I had some times there where I didn't lose weight. In fact, there was a period of time, about 10 weeks, I didn't lose a single pound, but I lost 6 inches off my waist in that time. So that was when I discovered that scale is a lying liar that lies. So stop stepping on it. I did step on it a few more times just to see that I did end up losing 180 pounds that year. And it became kind of my claim to fame now in the health world. Is I lost 180 pounds on the Atkins diet. But for me, my longevity in this is now I'm showing people all the health stuff that comes along with it. People come in for the weight loss, but they stay for the health gains.
Right. I've noticed too that a lot of people, when they are losing weight, you bring up a good point, that one will plateau. And I've seen this in my own journey. I didn't start off at 410 pounds, but I started off at 247 pounds. And I've gone back and forth over the years, but back about last May of 2018, I reached 247 pounds, and I just simply wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I'm 6'3", but my knees weren't feeling good. Yeah, my knees were hurting. I was snoring. I was waking up with headaches. My wife suggested that I probably should go get checks for sleep apnea. And I knew intuitively what the problem was. I needed to get the weight back down. And so that's what I ended up doing. But a lot of people think that they're going to lose maybe a half a pound every single day. But in reality, you plateau. You might go a week, 2 weeks, 10 weeks in your case, where you don't lose any weight on the scale. But metabolically, things are happening. And then next thing you know, you get on the scale and you're down 3 pounds, 5 pounds from one day to the next. And I think that's when most people end up quitting their diet, because they say, hey, this no longer works.
Yeah. And that frustrates the crap out of me.
Right.
As a patient advocate, I'm always reminding people, don't let that scale dictate how you're doing on your journey. Because when you're not, quote, losing weight, you may be losing inches like I was, but in addition to that, you're still doing very good metabolic things. So look at blood sugar, look at inflammation markers, look at all these wonderful things that show a whole lot more evidence that you're getting healthier than that stupid scale that just shows you your relationship to gravity on this earth.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you started a podcast. So to help share this information with your clients and with those who wanted to listen, you started a podcast about a decade ago, right? You have over 1,467 episodes was the last count.
Yep.
That's incredible. I mean, most people don't even know 1,400 people, nonetheless, 1,400 experts to interview and stuff. So how has that helped you as you continue along your journey?
Oh my gosh, it's been a blessing in my life, because after I lost the weight, a few months later, a guy said, "You need to start a blog." And I was like, this was 2005. I was like, "What's a blog?" So he's like, "Well, you just kind of write your thoughts in written form." And I was a natural writer. I'd always loved writing. I was an English nerd going through school. And so I started blogging. And about a year later, this guy comes to me and he says, "If you talk half as good as you write, you need to be a podcaster." 2006. And I was like, "What the heck is a podcast?" He said, you just kind of talk like you're on the radio, and it goes all to this thing called iTunes. And this was before the iPhone was even invented. That's how long ago I started, 2006. But October 2006, I decided to start this show called the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show. And it started off, that's my branding. It's pretty funny because I was a Ricky Martin fan at the time. He's not as relevant anymore. But what's funny, you look up Livin' La Vida Loca and you find my stuff now. It's funny. but anyway, I first 50 episodes of Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show was just me ranting about some topic. Like I remember I did why high fructose corn syrup is the devil and different things like that. And then I started attending some obesity conferences where some of these low carb researchers and other people, practitioners using this. And somebody said, "You should interview them." I don't know how to interview people. I don't have that skill, but I learned. And I learned on the job. I tell people I learned how to get good at podcasting and interviewing when nobody was listening to podcasts.
Right.
So yes, now I have almost 1,500 episodes of the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show, and I've branched off. I do a total of 6 podcasts now because I'm passionate about this subject and I want it to be heard loud and clear.
And we'll put links to all those in the show descriptions as well, so our listeners can follow you and listen to those. Now, let me ask you, so keto diet or ketogenic diet has become kind of the rage and becoming very popular, and a lot of people are comparing it to the Atkins diet. And in many ways, it's very similar. Atkins diet is how you started. I did Atkins diet as well 20 years ago, and it was a great diet. And how is a keto diet different than the Atkins diet? What would you tell somebody?
It's funny to me how keto has become so buzzy now in the diet trend. I wrote a book about that 5 years ago and nobody was talking about keto. So,
right.
So anyway, differences between Atkins and keto, it really comes down to the protein and the fat, because both diets recommend you keep carbohydrates at a minimum. And of course, minimum is relative to your metabolism. So if you have insulin resistance, you probably need to keep those carbohydrates somewhere around 20 grams total carbs or less. People with a little more metabolic flexibility, insulin sensitivity, could get upwards of 50 grams, maybe even more, some people, with the carbohydrates. But let's assume everybody kind of starts somewhere around 20 grams of carbs. That's Atkins, that's keto. But then what you do with the other macronutrients is what's interesting. Dr. Atkins in his book said, minimize the carbs, but eat unlimited fat and protein. And of course, in his mind, he thought, okay, people will get a nice mix of those things and they will choose, fattier cuts of meat and they'll get the fat and protein that way. Well, our fat phobic society, because of our low fat propaganda that's been pushed down our throats our whole life, we thought, okay, well, if low carb alone is good, low carb, low fat must be better. So they would opt for chicken breast and they would opt for broccoli with spray butter or spray margarine or whatever on it, and thinking that's a good Atkins diet. It fits within the Atkins template, but it sure ain't no keto.
Right, exactly.
So the difference with keto is you moderate down on protein because of the glucose effects that could come from consuming more than what your body could use. And then you finish off the calories and the energy consumption with fat. And so it's a low carb to your tolerance level, moderate protein to your personal threshold of protein. And again, if you're insulin resistant, that's going to be lower than other people. And then fat to satiety. A lot of times people hear high fat and they think, oh, you're gorging yourself on butter, sticks of butter. No, you don't have to. Fat is very dense in calories. So 2 tablespoons, you can get a good power punch of calories just from 2 tablespoons of butter, but you'd look at it and go, oh, that's not much, but it's like 400 calories. So you have to kind of keep that in mind. So that's the biggest difference is Dr. Atkins didn't put a fine point on what he meant by unlimited fat and protein. I know in his heart, because I've talked to his widow and she's like, oh, Bobby, that's what she called him, always wanted people to have the fattiest cuts of meat. I said, well, it got bastardized somewhere along the way because people were doing chicken breast thinking they were doing a good Atkins diet.
Right. So, yeah, it really became more of a protein diet at that time.
Yeah, and he was never about high protein, which makes all the headlines. Every time they talked about the Atkins diet, they always said that high protein Atkins. He never intended it for it to be a high protein diet, which is where keto comes into play. It's blatantly low carb, high fat, and it's very proud of that.
And moderate protein. Yeah, well, I think a lot of people don't realize that a couple things will turn it into sugar. So obviously sugar is sugar, carbohydrates become sugar, and protein can also be transformed into sugar.
Yeah, it can. And it's so funny, when I wrote that book, Keto Clarity, which I'll grab a copy to show on camera. But when I wrote this book 5 years ago, that was the biggest revelation that a lot of people thanked me for, was they're like, I had no idea that protein had that kind of effect on the body because of the whole gluconeogenesis, the liver converting excess protein into sugar. And even since then, we've learned from the work of some Nobel Prize winning in medicine work with autophagy and fasting, that we have all these kind of dead proteins that just kind of float around in the body. So we have available protein for our body to use beyond what we're feeding it. And so why are we overfeeding ourselves on protein? And I'm currently doing an experiment where I'm looking at more of kind of a carnivorous type of diet where I'm cutting carbs completely out, only focusing on animal-based foods. And I've found for me, it allows you a little more wiggle room to have a little more protein, but it's still not a free-for-all.
Right. Now, you brought up a good point about autophagy. And autophagy is kind of a newer concept that people are learning about. The discoverer of it won a Nobel Prize a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And autophagy, if you could please explain that, as I understand, it's kind of our body's way of scavenging itself. But that's kind of the genius of keto diet and the genius of even fasting. Can you discuss that?
Yeah, and I wrote a book about it called The Complete Guide to Fasting, if you want to learn more. But I see fasting as kind of a cousin of keto, because when you go keto, you very naturally start going into these periods of intermittent fasting, which is anything like 12, 15, 16, 24 hours would be an intermittent fast. So with autophagy, what we found and what that researcher found that won the Nobel Prize is when you fast for, say, 72 hours is kind of the minimum that they say this autophagy benefit starts to kick in. When you fast for that long, it basically is like a Roto-Rooter vacuum cleaner that sucks out all of that kind of stuff that's just floating around in the body. It cleans it up, and that has incredible benefits. You turn over the cells. You basically refresh your body. And so people are like, well, I want kind of a restart, a reboot on my health. I say, go keto, get keto adapted, start feeling good doing that, have no hunger and all the benefits that come from keto, and then fast for 3 to 5 days. Hmm. And most people by that time can easily fast for that long. I've done as long as 21-day fasts 3 times now, and I find I'm most comfortable doing about a 7-day fast now when I do longer fasts. And so, yeah, the autophagy is an incredible benefit. I'm really happy to see it being talked about a lot more, but fasting and keto are the keys to making it work.
So it's really kind of a two-part thing. I mean, people could simply lose weight by doing a ketogenic diet and eating, you know, from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. People could lose weight doing intermittent fasting and perhaps doing a paleo diet or even just the standard SAD diet, right? The standard American diet or so on. But I understand though that when you do keto, it's a lot easier to control one's cravings. If we're eating a lot of carbs beget carbs.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating because people often ask, should I fast before I go keto to help kickstart the ketosis? I said, if you like pain, because if you go from the standard American diet or even a paleo diet, which has like sweet potatoes or whatever in it, it may be less pain than going from the SAD diet, but going to a fasting protocol without having your body in a metabolic state where it can use fat for fuel very efficiently, you're just asking for pain and hunger. And so people, they hear the other F word, which is what I call fasting. They hear that and they go, oh my gosh, why would you ever starve yourself? Right. And they're not understanding that there is no panic mode in the kind of hunger that you get when you're keto, which is what makes fasting so incredible. With this keto carnivore I've been doing lately, I found, okay, I feel like a little gnawing, but it's not this like, you know, you got to eat right away. It's kind of like, all right, I should probably eat the next, you know, 2-3 hours. And it's not a panic mode. And it's such a freeing experience to feel that without having the hangriness that goes along with it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it's hard to describe unless you actually do it. And you start fasting, you feel energetic. One almost feels like they've had way too many energy drinks or a pot of coffee. and people, you know, I'm currently in on my second day of what's going to be a 3-day fast, but I might go to 7 days. We'll see how I feel.
Oh, you're in the worst day right now.
No.
Day two is generally the hardest one for most people. Although having done many fasts now, it's now nothing. But back when I first started, day one was easy because I was keto adapted and used to intermittent fasting. Day two was hard because it was like, hello, are you going to eat today? We're used to having food by now. Come on. And you get that kind of nudge. But after a while, you kind of like take in some salt, put it underneath your tongue. It works like magic, you guys. Drink plenty of water and all of that kind of intensity that you think your body has to eat goes away. And by day three and beyond, people don't believe me, Eric. They don't. When you tell them, the body will calm down and will be just fine. You'll be deep into a fast, say 5-6 days, and go, I don't think I ever have to eat again. It's the weirdest feeling.
Wow. And I think people, you know, obviously fasting is not, quote, the latest craze. It's something that's been, humans have been doing since the beginning of time.
Right. That's right.
You know, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad. I mean, every major world religion leader has fasted, and they understood the benefits not only physically but also spiritually, and just kind of cleansing one's body, mind, and soul. So there's a lot of benefits to it,
and it's got a great detoxification benefit as well. In my latest book, Real Food Keto, I wrote with my wife Christine, it's one of the things that you can do to help detoxify the body. So yeah, so many benefits to fasting.
Right. Now let me ask you, going back to the keto diet, a lot of people will get a keto flu, and where they just vomiting, nauseous, muscle aches. I personally did not have it. My wife did have it for a few days, and I haven't seen this anywhere, but my thinking too, and you know, tell me what you think, but I think a lot of it too is just our fat is releasing a lot of these toxins into our body. You think that's a big part of it, right?
Oh, that's a huge part of it, because you do shed a lot of weight really fast. But something else that happens when people first start on a ketogenic diet that they have no clue about, it's something I try to communicate often in my work, but when you shift your body from being sugar burner to fat burner, how does it do that? What's it doing? It's physically dumping glycogen stores in your body. Well, what's in the glycogen stores? Let's see. Glycogen, which is the sugar in the body, water, a whole lot of water, and then a lot of the electrolytes. So salt and potassium and magnesium, lots of things that are stored up in your muscles. People don't think about this, that when you're making this huge metabolic shift from being sugar burner to fat burner, you're dumping a lot of good things that your body uses. Well, you're going to dump water, you're going to dump salt, so you need to replenish those things. And people have been scared half to death of consuming salt in the same way they've been scared of saturated fat. So they go keto, they don't salt up, and they have these symptoms that mimic the flu. I kind of hate that phrase, the keto flu, because it sounds like you know, you caught something because of your diet. It's silly. All it is an electrolyte imbalance most of the time. And once you become keto adapted and get adequate salt and sodium and water and potassium and all those things, it's a pretty easy for you at that point.
That's probably where salted mixed nuts would be helpful, because that's kind of get the fat
and sign me up
at the same time. So definitely a lot more pleasurable. What are your thoughts on the raspberry ketones? Because you have ketones, but they're not ketones your body's making. So it doesn't necessarily mean burning fat. It just,
well, raspberry ketones aren't a thing, so please stay away from that. But I think what you're asking about too is all these exogenous ketones that are out there as well, that you can physically put beta hydroxybutyrate, which is the ketone body that's in the blood, salts into your body. It's one of those things that I think everybody's trying to find a shortcut to ketosis. You can get all the ketones endogenously very easily by cutting your carbs, moderating your protein, eating more healthy fats, doing it from mostly real whole foods. Boom, all the ketones you ever wanted.
Right.
But that said, I'll give that as the caveat. Yeah. That said, I think some people may be able to use them strategically. So if you're someone who's dealing with some kind of a neurodegenerative disease, I think those people could probably stand to benefit from coconut oil, MCT oil, and exogenous ketones. I think someone who's maybe an athlete that wants to, you know, enhance their performance on the day of a race or something like that, that's probably a good benefit. Or if someone is stressed or maybe had a bad night's sleep, and that will obviously dampen your ketone levels, maybe these become a middle ground to kind of get you through your day, so that when your body endogenously starts producing them again, you kind of have that bridge between that bad night's sleep, that stress, and then your body kind of kicking back in again.
Gotcha. Another question for you. Alcohol is a big question for a lot of people. They enjoy having a drink. What do you recommend for those on the keto diet? What alcohol is allowed on the keto diet?
So I would ask anyone who would ask that question, what's your goal? Is your goal to have pleasure in the day-to-day and having continuing to have that drink? Or is your goal to get healthy? And so make your decision about which is more important to you. So if you say, okay, I want to primarily be healthy, but I would like to indulge every once in a while, okay, that's great. I think the harder liquors tend to be the best. And also there's companies that make, and definitely out there where you live, there's companies that make wines that are lower in sugar. There's this company called Dry Farm Wines, but there's a bunch of companies kind of doing this style of lower sugar wine. So if wine's your thing, that's probably not a bad idea either. I'm not a drinker per se. When we do our low carb cruise every year, we'll have some then. But the harder liquors tend to be the lowest in carbohydrate. But keep in mind, it's really not about the carbs at that point. It's about your body having to deal with this toxin you just stuck in your body called alcohol. So if you go into that knowingly that you know what it's going to do to you, then that's on you at that point. But I would say, what's your goal? What are you trying to accomplish here?
Right. I think what I've found too, and I've seen this with even a lot of patients as well, that even people who drink one or two beers a day, when they go on to a keto diet and intermittent fasting, they find an inner strength, they find a discipline and a confidence level in themselves that they didn't realize that they had. And all of a sudden they find they don't need that evening snack. They don't need that evening glass of wine. So they're able to hold off and be in better control of their life and what they take in as they reach towards their goals.
It is amazing that all these things that we think we can never live without before we go keto. And then once you go keto, like for me, it was macaroni and cheese. I thought there's no way in God's green earth I would ever be able to not be able to eat macaroni and cheese. And not only do I not eat it today, it sounds repulsive today. And literally, it was a whole food group when I was a kid growing up. Right. I would eat macaroni and cheese. And my wife, Christine, will tell you, we'd buy like 50 boxes of the Kraft macaroni and cheese. And I'd make two boxes at a time and mix my own cheese in. I was a nut for that stuff and went keto, and I've had no desire. It just, in fact, in my mind's eye, it just would taste bland. It's gross now. I don't know what ever appealed eating that kind of stuff. But it's funny how your brain does kind of change. Everybody thinks they can't live without stuff when you really can.
Right. Vegetarian. What do you think about that and keto vegetarian?
I have a little bit of problem with someone who eschews all meat. So if a vegetarian wants to consume eggs and fish, then I think, okay, as long as you keep it high fat from like coconut based products, and with these eggs and with the fish, that's probably pretty good. In fact, I do a show on Thursdays called Keto Talk with Jimmy Moore and Dr. Will Cole. Dr. Cole is a functional medicine practitioner. He wrote a book called Ketotarian, which is all about how to do a mostly vegan vegetarian styled keto diet. And that's his recommendation, is to use eggs and fish. Now, if you don't get animal-based foods, my concern there would be, how do you get complete proteins? Because it's extraordinarily difficult, because the only complete proteins in nature come from animals. And so that would be my biggest concern with that. But I think in general, if someone has a little better sensitivity to carbohydrates, go for it. Eat all the vegetables you want. I'm doing the opposite of ketotarian right now. I'm doing meatotarian with what I'm doing. But I do think it could be done well. And there are some people demonstrating that it can be done well.
Gotcha. Okay. And another question for you. When you count carbs, 20 to 50 carbs is the number that I hear. Is that net carbs or total carbs that you recommend?
Oh, we need to stop playing games with people. Because I think, and I'll tell you where that net carb thing came from.
Yeah,
I have the history of it. So here it goes.
Great.
So the gentleman that wrote the book Protein Power, Dr. Michael Eads, that's old school low carb reference for you guys that have been around a while. But Dr. Eads thought, okay, let's give people a little more flexibility in the amount of carbohydrates they can consume. Let's subtract the fiber from the vegetables that they consume. And so in Protein Power, he said, you know, here are the net effective carbs that you're consuming. So if you have broccoli and it's got 20 grams of total carbs, but 12 of it is fiber, then you only have 8 grams of net effective carbs. That's the way he described it. Well, guess what? The food companies found out about this and they went cha-ching, cha-ching, and they started subtracting all kinds of things from those carbs that hadn't, you know, Dr. Eads never intended for it to be that way. So here's why he said subtract. Because fiber is absorbed and metabolized slower in the body, he says it shouldn't be counted. Well, slower doesn't mean not at all. And so that's why I'm a huge proponent of people counting total carbohydrates, because really at the end of the day, it's the only way to be intellectually honest about where you are in your tolerance level. You know, it's one thing to tell people, okay, find your tolerance level. But if you're playing math games, it makes it incredibly murky. So take the murkiness out, count total carbs. If that means you can eat up to 40 grams, which used to be 25 net carbs, great. Your tolerance is 40 grams, not 25.
Right.
So I think that's the biggest thing. Stop playing games with yourself.
And a lot of people just have to figure out what's best for them and where they plateau or where they gain weight and so on, and what numbers exact, you know, for them.
Yeah.
Because this is what a lot of the products out there now, right? There's, you know, the Atkins bars, of course, which have been around forever, and they talk about net carbs. And then the Quest
crap in those. Yeah.
Quest has their cookies and their bars as well. Yeah. So again, people should look at the total carbs though as well.
By the way, neither one of those products is keto, so stay far away.
Is that right? Yeah, they don't.
They're both like 20 something grams of total carbohydrates. They're both very high in protein and very little fat. That's not keto in anybody's book.
What's a good keto bar for a person who's on the run, who's going to be out that day, and they want to have something in their pocket in case they get hungry? What do you usually do as a keto snack?
I'm not a fan of snacks, only because if you're feeding yourself well in your ketogenic diet, you shouldn't have to snack. And in the in-between times, if you're out and about running around and you feel like you're going to have something to eat, you didn't eat enough fat or total calories in that previous meal. I'm currently, when's the last time I ate? So I'm currently in a 17-hour of fasting, and I'll probably go at least another 4, 5, 6 hours today before I eat. I have no inkling to snack, nibble on something. It's kind of this cultural thing around diets that we've always grown up with, and it's another low-fat era thing. Well, you must have snacks around. No, If you can't go many hours between meals, you're not doing it right. But that said, because I do live in the real world too, my wife, Christine, and I, we do love those little F-bombs. Have you seen those? The drop an F-bomb, the macadamia nut butter. Yeah. So it's in Vitamin Shoppe and GNC and CVS, dropanfbomb.com. I believe is their website. Yeah, it's cute. But they're just basically macadamia nut butter in a little packet. And so if you need a little something, that's a couple hundred calories worth of nut butter, which could satiate you if you're caught where you need something. It just tickles me to death every time I hear about the airplanes that are stuck on the tarmac and the people panic because they need to eat. And I'm like, what? It just makes no sense to me at all.
Right. So on this keto diet too, at the end of Keto Clarity, you talk about a lot of the health conditions, and I know there's still a lot of research going on about that too, but obviously keto's initially started, and we learned about this in medical school actually, for seizure control.
That's right.
And I remember thinking to myself, okay, so we have a dietary solution to a health problem, but yet it's last resort.
And in the 1920s, it was the resort, right? Because there weren't any anticonvulsant drugs at that point. And once the anticonvulsant drugs came around in the late 1930s, that's when keto went bye-bye. And thanks to the Charlie Foundation, which was created by this gentleman whose son was not responding to those anticonvulsant drugs, and he found out about the ketogenic diet from the 1920s. And so he put his son Charlie on this diet, and he was able to get him off of all the medications, was able to control his seizures. Charlie today is in his 20s and thriving thanks to the ketogenic diet. And so if it wasn't for him creating that foundation and making awareness of this, we still would be living in the dark ages regarding epilepsy and seizure control. And here's the thing. Nobody ever stopped to say, why did it control seizures? And if it controlled seizures, what else could it do? Not just with neurodegenerative types of diseases, but really all diseases. Let's take a look at that. And we're finally now here in 2019 getting some of that evidence. It's underway. A lot of those research, the research things of brain health and things like cancer, heart disease, on and on and on. We're seeing diabetes, type 2 diabetes, especially with Dr. Sarah Hallberg and her study that she's conducting. There's just so much good things happening with the ketogenic diet now. Anybody that says there's no science or it's just a fad, you're not paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I teach medical students from Loma Linda University Medical School and UC Riverside Medical School. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there's a big shift. There's a big paradigm shift. And these young kids are interested in nutrition. They are interested in diet.
Because they've had the internet.
Yeah.
That's why your generation didn't have the internet.
Right, exactly. So it's really exciting because I think there's a big paradigm shift to these doctors and future doctors. They realize that they're not learning about nutrition and preventive medicine, but they're going out and seeking it themselves because they know intuitively it makes sense.
Well, and you have to look at it from their perspective too. Their peers are like, hey, have you heard this keto thing? Aren't you going through med school? What do you know about this? Right. And so they're hearing about it. So it's probably making them inquisitive to dig deeper. Maybe they find my book. Maybe they're finding podcasts and listening to people talking about this. And they're more educated than their predecessors who went to med school 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah. And going back to the neurologic health, Dr. Bredesen, Dale Bredesen out of UCLA, right? Yep. He wrote a book called The End of Alzheimer's, and he promotes a low carb, high intake of coconut oil and yep. other medium chain triglycerides. So again, they're seeing health benefits when it comes to memory. And with Alzheimer's, obviously that's going to be one of the biggest challenges that society yes. will be facing. So we need to find solutions.
Well, and I think now that the knowledge that, Alzheimer's is being referred to as type 3 diabetes, it's putting a whole new spin on what they thought was just an old age disease. We now know it's totally tied to blood sugar and insulin control and inflammation. All of those things are contributing to this. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get somewhere with Alzheimer's. Meanwhile, the American Heart Association keeps putting out things of lowering your fat and eating more carbs. I'm going, mm-hmm. you're going to be so left in the dust of relevancy, if not already, that if you don't get on the bandwagon.
Yeah. Elevated. I think insulin is now quickly becoming the the arch enemy here, because insulin is, we're realizing, is the cause of not only obesity, probably even contributing to enlarged prostate and metabolic syndrome and fatty liver and, you know, brain fog and chronic fatigue, all these other inflammatory conditions. So again,
PCOS.
PCOS, yeah. So this is really the genius, I think, of the keto diet with the intermittent fasting, because in the end, really what we're doing is we're lowering insulin levels and allowing the body to heal itself.
And in conjunction with that, lowering inflammation. I don't think we talk about inflammation enough, because I think the lay public just doesn't really understand it. I think they're starting to understand it a little more, the connection that it has to insulin levels being higher. So I'm real excited to kind of be in this space now talking about this, and my role trying to translate some of the medical jargon into everyday language so people go, oh, that's what my doctor was trying to tell me.
Yeah, I've had a lot of success with patients at reversing diabetes. I had a gentleman, 45-year-old, his blood sugar was 318. Woo! His hemoglobin A1C was 12.3.
Wow.
And I basically told him, he was at the proverbial fork in the road. You have two options. Keep doing what you're doing. We're going to start you on one medicine. We'll add a second, a third, insulin, so on. Or you can go on a intermittent fasting, low-carb diet, keto diet, and I got his labs back yesterday, actually. So he's only on metformin, 500 milligrams.
Metformin's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, he's down about 35 pounds. Mm-hmm. His hemoglobin A1C in 4 months went from 12.3 to 5.5.
Wow. That's incredible.
Reversed his diabetes, and we are going to stop his metformin.
Now, see, the mainstream of medicine would say he got those benefits because he lost weight. That's right. That's what's been kind of out there in the zeitgeist of diabetes is, well, just lose weight and all of these numbers come into control. I'm like, no, you can actually not lose as much weight and bring your diabetes completely under control. The weight loss is merely a side effect of that glucose control, the insulin lowering, and all the things we just talked about. It's just so amazing to me how they try to justify, oh, it's the weight loss that caused it. No.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I had another gentleman, 70 years old, who whose A1C went from 10.5 to about 6.5. But most importantly, he was able to get off of 80 units of insulin. He's been off the last 6-7 years.
That's incredible. And it still baffles me how a type 2 diabetic would possibly ever go on insulin. I get that you're trying to cover the carbohydrate impact, but man, oh man, you're treating a disease by giving the very thing that they have too much of. Can you imagine a smoker who's trying to give up smoking and the recommendation is to have three times as much nicotine as they were smoking in their cigarette? It wouldn't make sense, would it? No. And yet that's kind of what we're doing with diabetes is, well, let's give them more of the very thing they're making too much of, rather than robbing them of the thing that's making the insulin get stoked to begin with. Carbohydrate restriction just makes so much sense in diabetes, and yet it's still mocked and scorned in the mainstream.
It really, that is so true. We can wrap it up here. You've written several books, about six or seven, I believe, actually.
Is that eight total with three more coming this year? Yes.
That's incredible. I don't know how you find the time to do it.
Drugs.
There you go. Exactly. Ketones.
Ketones, yes.
Going through your body. What's a great way for people who are just starting to learn about intermittent fasting and the keto diet? Where can you point them?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many great resources out there that are outside of what I do. Obviously I do a million podcasts. So if you like listening and you're not my voice isn't obnoxious to you, then go find my podcast. We actually have a website that has all of them under one roof, llvlc.com. That's Livin' La Vida Low Carb, just the first letters of each of those words, .com. And so you can access all of the things there. I highly recommend, if you haven't been before, go to dietdoctor.com. So my friend, Dr. Andreas Ehrenfeldt, he's a Swedish medical doctor. He put this together originally in Swedish, and I'm like, dude, you've got to make this information available in English. So he did. Dietdoctor.com has a ton of resources, recipes, information all about keto, all about fasting, videos, amazing website. Really, really love the work he's doing there. But get engaged. Go online. There are a million social media accounts that people are talking about keto. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all over the place. Just go find some of those people. I'm at Living Low Carb Man on all of those formats if you want to follow me. But yeah, the cool thing now, 5 years ago when I wrote Keto Clarity, there was nothing. I mean, literally, there was no such thing as the keto community. It was just a small group of practitioners that were doing it. I wrote a book about it, a few other people kind of writing about low carb, but it seems like everybody and their mama now is a keto expert. And so you're going to find some really good information and sift through it. If something doesn't pass your smell test, or if they're trying to push something that's very high in carbohydrate or very high in protein and calling it keto, let that spidey sense kick in and, okay, this doesn't sound right. So, find those people you connect with and never stop learning. I've done this a long time now. And even to this day, I'm still learning new things about myself.
What, you guys have a cruise as well?
Yeah. So the low carb cruise, we actually have two that we do every year now. So the low carb cruise is the flagship one. Our 13th year, we should get you as a speaker one of these days, is coming up this year. So we're leaving out of New Jersey, Port Liberty, May the 31st through June the 8th, lowcarbcruiseinfo.com. We also have one coming in the fall, late September, the Keto 101 cruise, which is a little more laid back. Both are laid back because it's a cruise. But Keto 101, we have a little more interaction with the audience. And so go sign up lowcarbcruiseinfo.com.
Excellent. Okay, great. Yeah, we'll check those out. And we'll put all those links in the show notes as well. So, Jimmy, hey, I really appreciate the time. I really appreciate you, your knowledge and what you've been doing for for patients. Obviously, you're not a physician, but you probably have helped more patients than most physicians out there ever will. And I commend you for that.
Thank you.
And your own journey, and again, very inspirational for a lot of people who are struggling. So whether you have 20 pounds to lose or 300 pounds to lose, it's something that can be done. And there is without surgery, and something that can be done just by eating a healthier diet. So.
And get healthy. Don't worry about that weight. Get healthy first, and the weight loss will be a side effect of that.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, and you have a blessed day.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.